Insider Intelligence subscribers can now take advantage of the exclusive opportunity to meet directly with our team of thought leaders in the financial services space. Through the new Analyst Access Program, expect to leave equipped with what you need to drive profitable sales, legitimize strategic ideas, and develop models of addressable markets and opportunities. Visit insiderintelligence.com/analyst access to learn more. Hello, everyone, and thanks for hanging out with us for the Behind the Numbers weekly listen and eMarketer podcast. This is the Friday show that is coming out on a Thursday because we're off tomorrow. It's also the show that is having itself a bit of a morning, as you could probably tell from Bill's expressions throughout the episode. I'm your host, Marcus Johnson, in today's show. Will news influencers replace traditional media?
The journalist who has a page and is doing their own thing, as a journalist, understands sources, fact-checking. That's why we turn to the news, right? To news outlets.
Is in-store sampling making a comeback?
But most sales are still happening in brick-and-mortar stores. So to succeed, brands need to take advantage of touchpoints in-store and more traditional forms of retail media like sampling and in-store radio.
Enough ads is enough.
People obviously don't want more ads, but they understand that more ads might mean the continuation or improvement in quality of service, given it might bring in more revenue for broadcasters. So evidently enough isn't enough in the UK. There's room for a little bit more.
Is social media addictive? Why more brands aren't encouraging folks to recycle? And where did daylight savings actually come from? Join me in this episode. We have three people. Let's meet them. We start with our Vice President of Content, who heads up our retail and e-commerce team based out of New York City. Ladies and gentlemen, it's of course, Susie David Canyon.
Hi, you forgot to mention proud Canadian.
That wasn't by accident. We're also joined by one of our senior analysts who is on that retail and e-commerce team based in the UK on the South Coast. It's Karina Perkins.
Hi, Marcus, and proud to be British.
Yes, indeed. Same. Great shirt, by the way. That proud to be British shirt you're wearing. Amazing.
Are you pleased with it? Yeah, I made it myself.
It's fantastic. For people watching the video podcast, just disregard.
I'm dying and Bill is like, what am I doing here?
And finally, joining us rather reluctantly, also in the UK, a few towns over on the South Coast, our principal analyst who covers everything in that very country, it's Bill Fisher.
Hello, Marcus. I'm indifferent to all nationalities.
Perfect. Also host, he has to be, he's the host of Around the World, other podcast, so he's neutral.
That's a great one.
How Swiss of you. Well played. Right, what do we have in store for you today? Well, we're going to start by talking about the story of the week and whether news influencers are going to replace traditional media, or have they already, perhaps, kind of. We then move to the game of the week where our contestants, Susie, Bill and Karina, try to compete for the championship belt. And then finally, dinner party data, the random trivia portion of the show. Let's start the episode. For the love of God, says Bill's face. We start with story of the week. Will news influencers replace traditional media? A recent Washington Post article by Taylor Lorenz notes that millions of independent creators are reshaping how people get their news, especially the youngest viewers. The piece notes that news consumption hit a tipping point during the early days of the pandemic, with more folks turning to social media platforms than to traditional news sites, at least according to the latest digital news report by the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism. According to Britain's Office of Communications, Ofcom, young adults now spend more time watching TikTok than broadcast TV. One in five young people use it as a source of news. TikTok, that is. Miss Lorenz points out that whilst a few national publications, the New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, have seen their digital audiences grow, allowing them to reach hundreds of thousands more readers than a decade ago, the economics of journalism have shifted. Well-known news outlets have seen a decline in the amount of traffic flowing to them from social media sites. Folks, what do we think? Will news influencers ultimately replace traditional media?
I think it's kind of happening in front of our eyes. I've got an anecdote for you. I like a personal anecdote and tends to involve my children. So talking about social platforms becoming the source of news, it's becoming the source of truth. So I don't know if anyone's familiar with the Ballon d'Or. It's a French media award that is given to the world's best footballer. And that ceremony happened a couple of weeks ago. Everybody knew Lionel Messi was going to win it. However, It was happening in the evening, late evening time at GMT. My kids came to me after dinner to tell me that Leo Messi had won the award. And I said, I'm pretty sure they haven't awarded it yet. But they'd seen it on TikTok. They saw the video. That was the truth. And I had to sit them down and educate them again, because I feel that my kids are quite well educated. I talk to them about how to use social media responsibly, check multiple sources. What is the source of this news? They hadn't done it. This was their source of truth. And it was all rubbish. It was a manufactured video, stitched together old video clips. And so I had to re-educate my kids. And so, you know, At university, I studied English language and I did a unit on culture and communication. I figured in a couple of generations' time, this kind of education would have filtered down into early years education, but it hasn't. Kids aren't being educated in how to use social media. And so we're really in danger of traditional media being very quickly overrun by these sources of truth.
Well, it's kind of scary, right? Just what you said now is super scary. And then you throw in the AI bit around false news. But I think the headline is misleading a tiny little bit because even with that stat around 1 in 5 use TikTok, but are they using the creator sort of news stories? Or are they using CNN? And CNN or BBC or whoever, whatever news outlet has figured out how to use social platforms to deliver news in a different way to a younger generation, which I'm guessing from Bill's story, probably most of them are using some random influencer who's trying to amplify news that they are creating. But is that what everybody's doing?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, they don't always get the choice because of the algorithm. It will feed them what it thinks it wants them to see.
Well, we were talking about this at work the other day. If you hover long enough on dad jokes and kitten videos, or if your friend sends you enough kitten videos, then that's all you get. You don't actually even get news. So that is what I would recommend.
Someone sending you too many, but it sounds personal. Is this someone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Karen, I know you always listen.
Karina? Is that?
Thank you.
Is that one?
Well, no, I was going to say.
No, sorry. Is that your name?
Oh, is that me?
Karen. Yeah, if you could stop it, we'd appreciate it.
I love a cat video.
Real Karina, what do you think?
Well, I think an element of this as well is that people are just tired of the news and they don't want to watch the BBC anymore because it's really, really depressing because we've had COVID, we've had wars, we've had inflation, it's all just really bad news, isn't it? And so they go to social media sites looking for a bit of entertainment. And then actually there are some people talking about the news, but that's kind of easier for them to digest than watching the BBC perhaps version of it.
Yeah.
So I think there's an element of people just being tired of the news, looking for entertainment, and that's inevitably going to be social media. And I think perhaps the way that creators or news influencers are delivering the information, it's a bit more about the debate. It's a bit more lively, I guess, than what they're getting through the traditional news channels.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing we probably needed to start with was the difference between a journalist posting on social and a random influencer wanting to become a journalist, right? Because to Bill's point, the journalist who has a page and is doing their own thing as a journalist understands sources, fact-checking. That's why we turn to the news, right? To news outlets. And even when you turn to news outlets that maybe lean one way or the other, you still know you're getting it with that lens because it's very, very, everybody knows, right? So you don't kind of get that from these random influencers that are trying to go big.
It's like saying screen time, right? It could be good screen time. Maybe you're texting your parents or in a group chat with your family or whatever, or it could be bad screen time. Maybe you're wasting time just scrolling through meaningless content.
I mean, I think the mainstream news outlets also have themselves to blame a little bit for this shift because I think, you know, especially in this country, in the UK, sort of tabloid journalism, I think that while journalists have been taught to have very high ethical standards and check sources and be neutral on certain things, I don't think that is necessarily the case, especially the way that the kind of news ownership, I guess, the mainstream news outlets are owned. So I think people are really tired of that and they would prefer to go to their peers who they feel perhaps have less of an agenda than a big mainstream news outlet.
Yeah, in many cases, influencers run traditional media, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I also thought you were going to go with if like a CBC, the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, had felt like I needed to throw in a Canadian station. But so if they have a social page, which I will definitely start to follow after today, the other problem that we see is the like clickbait, right? As they're trying to maneuver into this sort of news bite, 30 seconds, scroll through. It's not even 30 seconds, let's be honest. It's like you have 3 seconds, right, to get their attention. So the headline is just so clickbaity. There's no other better word for it, right? So then you're going to their website because that's how they're monetizing, but it's not always the right thing for the consumer.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that's, again, putting people off mainstream news outlets when they just see on all they're seeing on social from these news outlets is kind of clickbaity headlines. I think that really puts people off.
Yeah, that is definitely a drop in the trust in traditional media. And going into what you were saying about a drop in people paying attention to the news, there's some numbers from Pew showing people aren't following the news as much as they used to. Pew Research Center had some numbers on this and showing that from 2018 to 2022, so over those 4 years, the share of Americans who said they follow the news all or most of the time fell from 52% to 38%. And as you mentioned, there's been wars during that time. There's been the pandemic during that time. So there's been plenty of elections. There's been plenty of stuff for people to pay attention to. There's not been an evaporation of things to tune into. By demographic, from 2016 to 2022, over those 6 years, older folks, 65 plus, went from 75% to 65% in terms of paying attention to the news. And 20-year-olds went from 27, which is already low, to 19. But yeah, it's interesting. It's not the same journalistic quality, even though, you know, you're getting one report from here and one report from there. It's the same topic. But Jay Rosen, Associate Professor of Journalism at NYU, saying it's never been easier to be both informed and misinformed, Bill, to what you were saying about world events. Regardless of that, though, half of US adults got at least some of their news from social media.
But I do think there's a lot of tension, even if you think about the regular news outlets here. There's that Citizen app where people are posting in real time things, and then ABC is using, they're sourcing it, but they're like, here's Citizen footage of what's happening, and then they're reporting it as news. So I think it's a little bit like everybody's to blame, and there's a lot of tension.
Yeah, I think that news outlets using social media, people posting on social media as news, happens a lot now as well. And I think that's, slightly dubious at times.
Survey from Kagan as well, I thought was quite interesting, from this summer. Americans who get most of their information about news and breaking events through social media, they had it by generation, 77% of Gen Zs, 67% for millennials, half of Gen X, just 28% of baby boomers. So yeah, we can see the effects of this shift. Miss Lorenz was noting that some outlets that even started on the internet have begun to struggle. Newsfeed saying they're shutting last April. Vice entering bankruptcy. Gawker shutting down for the second time in February. And the trend likely to continue. Reuters Institute Director Rasmus Klein Nielsen saying, quote, there are no reasonable grounds for expecting that those born in the 2000s will suddenly come to prefer old-fashioned websites, let alone broadcast and print, simply because they grow older, close quote. That's all we've got time for the story of the week. Let's move to the game of the week. Today's game is brand new today. I'm kidding. It's What's the Point?
Phew.
I read out for the panic in Susie's face. I read out four stories. Susie, Bill, and Karina give us their main takeaway of each. Okay, answers get 1 point. Good answers get 2. And answers that give you the same feeling as when a baby smiles at you.
Oh, Bill.
Bill's not. Yeah, Bill's not. Yes. Yeah. Not. No, Bill?
What? I'm happy with that.
You didn't see. Oh, okay. You didn't seem terribly impressed. It's happened once.
There isn't normally a camera, so, you know, do you want to just see more excitement?
They're getting to see all of your personality now, Bill. All of it.
Yes. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah. It's great.
Answers that leave you with that feeling, I guess, they get you 3 points. You get 20 seconds to answer before you hear this noise. There we go. If you run long, you get a pie thrown at you. We can't do that because everyone's remote, but wouldn't that be fun?
That would be
yes. High stakes.
It really would.
Oh, that got you excited.
Better,
Bill.
Better. So yeah, don't run long is the point. Karina, no keynotes, okay?
Sure.
Sure. She's practicing for AP.
Most points wins. We'll start with round one, and we're going to start with Karina. Let's see how this goes. Is in-store sampling making a comeback? Our Retail Briefings analyst Rachel Wolf writes, in-store sampling is regaining popularity. as brands look for ways to make up for diminishing returns from online ads. Walmart is expanding its sampling program to over 1,000 stores, while Wakefern Food Corp said in May it would add vending machines with samples to nearly 100 ShopRite and The Fresh Grocer locations. But Karina, in-store sampling making a comeback, what's the point?
I think the point here is that it's foolhardy for grocery brands to rely on online advertising alone. There's been a big surge towards e-commerce, and we've seen a big surge towards retail media as a result, but most sales are still happening in brick and mortar stores. So to succeed, brands need to take advantage of touch points in-store and more traditional forms of retail media like sampling and in-store radio, as well as digital screens. And that's something we've seen in this country, at least, retailers really doubling down on in-store retail media via digital screens in stores.
Bill.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you think, Karina. I haven't really seen much evidence of this happening locally in the UK, but I love a free sample, so hopefully it will make a comeback. I think it makes a lot of sense. Another route to consumers in amongst all this difficulties with targeted advertising, privacy issues, cookie deprecation and all that. It's a very direct, experiential approach. So I definitely think there's room for this thing. And, you know, we've seen a return to in-store shopping, certainly in the UK post-pandemic. So yeah, good idea. More free samples, please.
Susie.
Me too. I'm all about samples. Everybody knows it's why I go to Costco when I get the chance. But I do think there might be a little leap
and then
between tasting.
Again. Next time, buy something. Okay.
So that's exactly what I do. Then I go for the $2 hot dog and then with the drink. And then I go home.
She's out.
But, you know, honestly, I do think that there's a leap. I agree with everything everybody just said, but I do think there's a leap between tasting something and buying something, and that you need some sort of sense of urgency, like whether it's a coupon or if it's, you know, limited time in the store or some sort of reason why you're buying it today and not a different day when you go back to the store. Grocery shopping is like a mix of going in with a list and or impulse, depending on who you are. And so sampling is kind of more or less impulse purchases, right? So it just depends on what kind of shopper you are.
Let's move to round two. Good start.
Wait, what's the score?
Already?
Yes.
Jesus.
Yeah, we need more transparency around scoring.
Karina, don't get involved. Oh, don't encourage her.
Oh, there we go. I'm going to get zero now.
Yes.
No, I already got the zero. We can't both have zero.
You do it your way, Bill, Marcus. You do it your way.
Thank you. Oh, Bill, you got an extra point.
Oh, you know what? Bill, as a host, is more empathetic about this hosting situation. Oh, he's going to win for sure.
Yeah, because he didn't ask for the score after round one. That's crazy. Fine. That's like if you were a boxer. After round one, you went to the corner to the judge. You were like, how's it going? Focus on the fight? Okay, never mind.
Do I have any bruises?
It's everyone's got two. Round two, though. We start with Bill. Enough ads is enough, reads an article by Frankie Carra of Mountain Research. The company outlined a few findings recently. One, folks who saw a CTV ad six times within an hour had the highest awareness at 92% recall. If you had four exposures to the ad, it dropped to 85. If you had just one, it dropped to 64%. Number two, there was a 16% drop in viewers' intent to buy from one exposure to six. So the more you were shown, the more your intent to buy dropped. And three, half of viewers said they will switch to another streaming service or unsubscribe if they get the same ad too often. But Bill, enough ads is enough. What's the point?
Yeah, I'm going to take an interesting angle here, a local perspective. So the media regulator over here, Ofcom, has just recently been reviewing what it refers to as COSTA rules. That stands for the Code of Scheduling of Television Advertising. There are pretty strict rules for public service broadcaster advertising, PSB advertising over here. Lots of subclauses and stuff, but essentially there's a strict limit on the number of ads that can be shown on TV and CTV per hour and the duration of time they take up. Well, Ofcom's done a bunch of research into consumer attitudes, market influence of non-PSB channels and other related stuff, and it's recommending that these strict regulations are relaxed. It doesn't think that the restrictions are justified. It found that there was some audience elasticity with regards to opinions on advertising. People obviously don't want more ads, but they understand that more ads might mean the continuation or improvement in quality of service, given it might bring in more revenue for broadcasters. So evidently enough isn't enough in the UK. There's room for a little bit more.
Hmm. Maybe I'll stay in America. Susie.
So what I thought was kind of a lackluster insight was that the more ads you get, the more you recall things, obviously, right? The more you see something, the more you're going to remember. What I thought was fascinating was apparently if you see one ad, your recall is 64%. And so like, I wonder if you really do need to see six of the same ad to have strong recall. What I also thought was kind of interesting was that, which is exactly the opposite of what Bill just said, in the US apparently, people associate too many ads to bad live streaming service and don't have that empathy around, oh, I get it. They need to run a business. And so one in two say they would switch live stream platforms. But the truth is that's like also not possible because you're usually tied to a show that is available at one platform. And so you're not going to just change because you're seeing too many ads. You're just going to go get chips or popcorn or whatever it is. It's kind of like saying to a retail store, I'm not going to come and buy your private label from you because you're annoying. It's not going to happen if you're in love with that private label. Mm.
Karina.
Yeah, so my insight is slightly different, or the thing I found interesting is slightly different. We've all seen the same ad repeatedly over and over again and found it really annoying. I think it does depend on how good the ad is. Sometimes if an ad's really funny, you can see it a few more times and it's not annoying yet. But for me, the really interesting thing here was the suggestion that ad channels like CTV are making it easier to track the effectiveness of campaigns being served on TV screens. And I think that's a really interesting point because I think as kind of advertising evolves, it's becoming harder and harder for marketers to hide behind smoke and mirrors because there's evidence in sort of what impact those tactics are having on consumer habits. And that's happening across advertising. And I think it's really interesting to see whether that eventually is going to result in a more enjoyable experience for consumers.
Mm. Nice, folks. At the halfway mark, Bill just ahead with five, Susie and Karina tied in joint second place, also known as joint last, on four. We start with Susie for round three. Is social media addictive? Here's what the science says, writes Matt Richtel of the New York Times. He explains that a group of 41 states just filed a suit against Meta, Facebook and Instagram's parent company, contending that it knowingly used features on its platforms to cause kids to use them compulsively. But the piece questions whether young people are becoming addicted to social media and the internet. David Greenfield, a psychologist and founder of the Center for Internet and Technology Addiction in Connecticut, says devices lure users with powerful tactics. One is called intermittent reinforcement, which creates the idea a user could get a reward at any time. Think slot machines. Adults are susceptible, kids even more so, because their brains aren't fully developed yet. But Susie, is social media addictive? What's the point?
There's no point. It's addictive. We all know anything that's like mindless entertainment, whether it's social, whether it's games, whether it's for some people shopping, anything that brings you this sort of peace and quiet, whatever that looks like for you, is going to be addictive, especially as we think about how not great the world is right now. So there's no point. I also didn't understand this intermittent rewards. What? I don't get rewards for being on social. What are the rewards?
People like your post.
It's intermittent reinforcement. So it's just the opportunity to like get rewarded at any time. So whether that's with certain...
Nobody's given me money.
No, but I think
randomly.
It means... not an actual slot
yeah,
machine.
Yeah, I think it's... So
go on, Bill.
It's when people like your tomato plants.
I should post more then. I'm going to send you, there are so many more. You guys aren't even going to believe that it's November
more.
Here. I'm going to send the picture for the Instagram.
I don't want to speak on behalf of the world, but I think we're done with the tomato plants. Bill, you're going to help explain.
It's okay. I'll explain when it's my turn because I'll talk all about reward.
Well, Bill, well played, sir. Round of applause for Bill. Okay, enough. Enough applause.
He knows how to game the system.
He does. Karina, you're up.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because social media and the internet as a whole is quite an interesting paradox because it's got the potential to do so much good. And on the other hand, it's got the potential to do so much harm. I think Susie's right. Of course, it's addictive. I guess there's some argument in the kind of harm that it causes is being addicted to social media as the other consequences as bad as being addicted to drugs or gambling. I guess it's what you're looking at on social media. If you're addicted to online shopping, that might have some financial consequences, I guess. But I do think social networks need to do more to protect younger users, but I think that's probably less about addiction and more from harmful content. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the Online Safety Bill can achieve in the UK to that.
Bill?
Yeah, so I'm a case in point, I think. I've spoken many times about my mild addiction to TikTok. I clearly have a very young brain because I'm very susceptible to this temptation reward. And the reward is the dopamine hit that I get. So I want the next video because I think it's going to be better than the last one. I'm waiting for a good video to come. And I'm going to keep scrolling till I get that really good video that's going to make me laugh and it's going to give me that dopamine hit. That's the reward. And I get pulled into this vicious cycle. And that's why I spend 2 hours or more watching TikTok each day. Yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
Did you hear how soft or more was?
Almost. Or my whole working day.
It's a work, Bill. It's a work.
It's research.
I thought it was interesting.
Sorry,
that...
I didn't mean to cut you off. I cut him off.
She did.
Sorry,
no, I kind of finished. That's it. I mean, you know, the algorithms, I guess, is something else that are feeding this cycle. But, you know, it's dangerous. It's addictive. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is how I feel about the weekly listen, about the
it's
reward
addictive.
Of winning. Yeah.
Oh, like,
it's
winning, not
Bill
listening.
Bill is like very,
clearly
very
listening
like,
to the show.
That too,
no,
but winning.
Fine.
My internet addiction is looking at adverts for horses that I can't afford.
That's cute. Oh. I play games. Yeah. It's very sad.
Moving on. I thought it was interesting that there's no addiction definition. So it's saying 10 years ago, the idea of internet gaming addiction was introduced. Dr. Michael Rich, director of Digital Wellness Lab, at the Digital Wellness Lab at Boston Children's Hospital, saying he prefers the term, staying away from addiction, preferring the term problematic internet media use, a term that's gained currency in recent years because he doesn't like the term addiction because the internet can be used, to your point, for a lot of good. But yeah, the idea of getting some kind of a definition of addiction or problematic internet media use, I think is quite interesting. All right, folks, let's move to round four. Bill still out in front by just 1 point. So all to play for in double points. Round four, we start with Karina. Encouraging consumers to recycle is a marketing win for brands. So why aren't they doing more of it? Questions Robert Clara of Adweek. He cites chemical engineer and paper scientist Richard Venditti, who is a professor teaching unit ops of pulp and paper, environmental life cycle assessment, and bioeconomy at North Carolina State University. Good God. Who says all pizza boxes can, folks, in fact, be recycled. According to him, who's somewhat of an expert, as you can tell from his title, encouraging customers to recycle their products is a potential win for brands, says Mr. Clara, who wrote the piece. But most pizza brands have stayed away from the recycling issue, unwilling to wade into the morass of confusion that surrounds it. But Karina, encouraging folks to recycle, marketing win for brands, apparently, but they're not doing it and nearly enough, the article suggests. What's the point?
Well, yeah, I think this is an interesting one because I think brands do it more here in the UK and we've got a slightly different system here in the UK. But I think the point is that brands and consumers can have all the will in the world to recycle, but if the infrastructure isn't there, it's going to fail. So perhaps in the UK, we're a little bit ahead from the US on recycling, but I think that's partly because we're a much smaller country. It's much easier to get a joined up approach than it is somewhere like the US, where you've got so many different states, so many different regions. And even here, rules will vary depending on regions. Some areas will recycle Tetra Pak, others won't. And, you know, it's a confusing matter. So I think if we're ever going to really achieve a circular economy, we need to think outside the box. And find ways
more.
Not only did she put a pun in there, but she had to tell us.
I paused.
Oh, that's what it was. I thought you finished your answer. I was like, that's
hilarious laughter.
That was abrupt. You just finished. All right, yeah. I've got a laugh track.
No. We're going to have to think outside the box and find ways to have a much more joined up approach across government and business.
Well played.
She didn't
insert a can after
that.
We won't. Just the tumbleweed. Do we have a tumbleweed on this knowledge machine? V, help
wah,
us out.
Wah, wah.
Bill, what you got, mate?
Yeah, I. Sorry, I'm getting over that joke.
I stunned him into silence.
Yeah.
He's laughing. Use that for the baby thing.
I'm going for the sympathy points
yeah.
now.
Look, I agree with a lot of what Karina says there. I wonder if cost has got something to do with it. I think the piece talks a bit about different standards for different municipalities when it comes to recycling. In the UK, this was used recently as a political tool. The government talked about bringing in a six bin national service level whereby all households will get six bins into which they'd need to separate their various waste and recycling. The pushback from local councils was that it was just going to be prohibitively expensive to roll that out. So I just wonder for brands too, if there was some kind of similar consideration to that. Also a realization that they can't just claim to be green by encouraging recycling, you know, this greenwashing thing. They need to back it up with action, but that action might be a bit too costly at the moment.
Susie.
So I agree with everything. The other extra thing I would add to all of that is asking consumers to do mental math and adding a layer of complexity that seems counterintuitive is hard. And so when you have that component plus the greenwashing, I think it's hard. It's asking for everybody to hold hands across the entire ecosystem and then sort of putting all your faith in the consumer who will actually go through the trouble of recycling. Too hard. Sad though.
All right, folks, that's all we've got time for the game of the week. Oh, interesting 2021 P&PB study showing 57% of folks were aware that pizza boxes are recyclable. But yeah, I feel like everyone just knows anecdotally. You ask folks, some people will be like, that is recyclable, that's not. No one can seem to agree just in life in general, in our personal lives. So yeah, you can understand the confusion. All right, folks, that's all we've got time for the game of the week. This week's winner, a drum roll. A drum roll.
My hands are sweaty. Like a... Come on.
Bill is this week's winner of the game of the week.
That's the best, like, that's all I've got on this. I don't know what I normally do. Let's just do round of applause.
Karina and I are on pins and needles over here waiting for you to call Bill's name.
Yeah, it was always going to be Bill. Congratulations to Bill.
I already knew that.
He is the winner of the game of the week.
Well done, Bill.
In case...
Well done, woo!
Didn't feel as genuine from Susie. Bill, you had 13, Karina 12. That puts Susie in last place on...
Oh, come on. Nobody believes you.
That's a pretty clear British win then.
Yeah. Gold, silver. Don't really remember bronze.
You are British, so obviously.
Yeah. Actually, I'm American. Born in the States.
You know what? So. We were wondering, I'm not going to say who the we were, but it's not just me and it was not my idea, so I'm not taking any credit for this. Are you keeping track of the weekly listen, the people who've won the most in a year?
It won't be you, so don't worry. Bill, do you have any last... final word?
I've never won this thing to your questions, Susie. So
everybody.
I don't think I have. I've never prepared for a final word. Beware of TikTok, kids. It's dangerous. It rots your brain.
Never mind kids, adults, everyone. Bill, we've got to get you out more. You live on the South Coast. It's beautiful. Let's move on. It's time now for Dinner Party Data. This is the part of the show where we tell you about the most interesting thing we've learned this week. We start with Bill, because he won.
Okay, so we've talked about news, so I thought I'd regale you with a couple of newspaper stats. The UK's first daily newspaper first went into circulation in 1702. It was called the Daily Courant, C-O-U-R-A-N-T. Lots of newspapers followed, and 144 years later, a newspaper called the Daily News hit the streets in 1846, and it had a very famous editor. Think of the year. Any guesses on who that editor might be? It's seasonal as well. There's a clue.
Oh, no.
It was Charles Dickens. Charles Dickens was the first
say
editor.
Charles Dickens, yeah,
of the Daily News.
Yeah,
cool. No, because it's Bill, but I was good. There's a delay from the US to
Yeah. And you know, he was a supporter of the Liberal Party, and he wanted a commentary that would compete with The Times, which was a more right-wing publication. So, again, evidence that influencers have always been a part of media publications.
Interesting. Very nice, very nice. Let's go Karina, because she was second, not Susie.
Thanks.
So I thought I'd do some fun recycling facts.
Oh, well played.
Yeah, thanks. So each UK household produces over 1 ton of waste per year, which is the same weight as a small car.
Wow. Wow.
England.
Every year, the average dustbin contains enough unrealized energy for 500 baths, 3,500 showers, or 5,000 hours of television. I don't know how many hours of TikTok, Bill. And on average, every person in the UK throws away their own body weight in waste every 7 weeks.
Oh, could have done without that last one. Is there anything else, Karina?
Yeah, up to 60% of the waste that ends up in the bin could be recycled.
60%?
60%.
Especially food.
Oh, wow. Mm. Okay. That was depressing. But sobering. Push, thanks for bringing those. we've got a long weekend to look forward to here, Karina. Not anymore. Who's next? Susie.
So I told a lot of friends that I had Friday off for Remembrance Day, and nobody knew what I was talking about.
Oh, good.
Which made me realize that here it's called Veterans Day in the US, and I still think of it as Remembrance Day, which is observed by all the Commonwealth countries.
Oh, you still call it Remembrance Day back in Canada?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Observed by Commonwealth countries to honor those who died on the front line of World War I, and it was the end of the hostilities. It is marked on November 11th at 11 a.m. with a 2 minutes of silence, which is when World War I ended in 1918. It was once called Armistice Day until World War II, and then it moved into Remembrance Day. I assume you guys also have the poppies. The poppies are what symbolizes Remembrance Day. There are veterans that are walking around handing them out for a little donation, which I think is very sweet. And when we were kids, I don't know about you all in the UK, but we had to learn the poem. It's a Canadian author, so maybe you didn't have to learn it. In Flanders Field, which was penned in 1915 by a doctor and a lieutenant colonel, John McCrae.
Very good.
Did you guys learn the poem?
Can you read us the poem?
The whole poem? No, we don't have to.
Well, a snippet.
You know, when I was learning it 30 some more years ago, it was in Flanders Field where the poppies grow, but now it's blow. So I'm not really sure what happened that they switched up the word. I don't know if there was something wrong with the word grow, because it's a bit of a sad reason why the poppies grow.
Perhaps they don't actually grow then.
Apparently it's the poppies are in a lot of the landscapes in that part of the world.
Oh,
very nice. Very
so
nice,
happy
folks.
Remembrance Day. And if you're listening from the US, happy Veterans Day.
Same. Yeah, yes, indeed. Very nice, very nice. I got one for you real quick. Where daylight savings comes from. So, Olivia B. Waxman of Time Magazine seems to have figured it out. So here's a short history for you. The first daylight savings time policy began in Germany, May 1st, 1916, in the hopes that it would save energy during World War I. It's according to Michael Downing, author of Spring Forward, which is a book about it. British builder William Willett in 1907 was arguing, so this is the year after, that the sun shines for several hours each day whilst we're asleep, and passed away before they wrote it into law, but England soon adopted daylight savings time after that. I don't know why he was championing it. I guess he's a builder, so maybe he wants more time in this daylight to work. But England got it very shortly after. And then the first US law on daylight savings time went into effect March 19th, 1918, for the same fuel saving reasons. It was a bit of a patchwork until 1966, where the Uniform Time Act was signed by President Lyndon B. Johnson, became the first peacetime daylight savings time law. However, Arizona and Hawaii, the two states who don't observe daylight savings. That's where it came from. Some people think it's because of farmers, but it's not, apparently. It could be. Who really knows any of this stuff? Not me. One other fact, though, a recent Pew Research article notes that only about a third of the world's countries practice daylight savings. Most of Europe, North America, Canada, Mexico, US, Brazil, Chile, Mongolia, Australia, New Zealand, and a few others. Egypt actually got rid of it and then brought it back. About half the world used to observe daylight savings, but just a third does now. So miserable, isn't it? I miss me with the, an extra hour of sleep. That lasts for an hour, and then you have to just be in darkness for the next 5 months. I can't be around it. I have to be. I live here. Thank you so much to my guests for hanging out today. Thank you to Susie.
Thanks for having me.
She came in last. Thank you to Karina.
Thanks, Marcus. Great as always.
She came in second and gets the silver. Well played. And finally, thank you to Bill, winner of the Game of the Week with a magnificent gold.
Thank you, Marcus. That was incredibly enjoyable.
You are more than welcome.
Without even a smile.
Well played. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, Stuart, who runs the team, Sophie, who does the social media. Thanks to everyone for listening in. Our surprise question, giveaway question, if you missed it, was, what was the Beatles' official debut single? If you know the correct answer, you can email us at podcast@emarketer.com or DM us on Instagram, Insider Intelligence. One word is where you can find us. And please include a screenshot of your review of this podcast, and you could win a free Behind the Numbers branded water bottle. We're off tomorrow, though, for Veterans Day. Thanks to all of the men and women for serving, or who have served, which includes my dad, who served in the US Air Force for 20 years. Couldn't be prouder of you. We'll see you guys hopefully on Monday, because we're off tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast. Happy, happy weekends. Stuart, if you're watching this, I'd love some lights. It'd be great. Can you just sit in the corner of the room and just wait until it, and then just press the button? Bring a laptop in or a snack, perhaps, so you have something to get up to. Looks like I've just got, just from here, just half my face.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looks quite good, actually. Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. It's like a green screen.
Stuart, the light. Don't worry, I've got a light on my phone. Stuart, the lights.